There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Former Governor Don Siegelman. Former Governor Dr. Robert Bentley.
Wait a second. Wait a second. What was he doing there? All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5. It is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. Yeah, so we'll talk about that with our buddy Todd Stacey in 1 second from Alabama Daily News. Also, I want you to take in everything here on the Fast Food Summit. You know, the questions about President Trump and bringing McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King.
I believe, I don't know if the weather changes things, but the Clemson championship team, the national championship team, will be coming tonight. It'll be exciting. Very great team, an unbelievable team. They'll be coming tonight, and I think we're going to serve McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King's with some pizza.
And pizza. He did not identify. I know that's a problem there. He did not identify the actual kind of pizza that would be at the White House. But I will say, we'll save this for the second half of the hour. To those who have said unprecedented that a president would have this focus on fast food, we'll open up the history books and go back through presidents and fast food on today's Midday Mobile. All right, I want y'all to say hello to Todd Stacey for the Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, and a man who was staked out there yesterday in Montgomery on Inauguration Day. Hey, Todd.
How's it going?
Good. So did you watch the parade? I didn't get to see. I watched the proceedings, but I did not get to see the parade.
Yeah, I was actually at the top of the hill, the top of Dexter Avenue near the Capitol, so I saw the end of the parade route where the governor and the lieutenant governor, all of them, ended and climbed up the dais to get on the stage back again. So I saw all the end of it.
Now, a couple questions I got to ask you because I didn't see it. Number one, were there throws? I mean, I know this is, you know, I mean, this is how we see things from South Alabama. Down here in Southwest Alabama, if it's a parade, we usually throw something.
I did not see any beads, and I did not see any moon pies. to my great disappointment. I mean, goodness, you had some good mobilians there, but I did not see any moon pies or beads, unfortunately.
I think maybe if you could just drop a suggestion up there for the next inaugural parade, say, you know, if y'all want to make a little tip of the hat, even though y'all aren't going to, you know, send any money back to Southwest Alabama, if you could at least give them a little tip of the hat and do some throw some beads or something during the parade.
I think they'd be smart to. Well, shoot, Sean, I think we should have the next inauguration down there. It
now
sounded like the party went pretty well. So
yeah, so I mean, and I, you know, I said that to you last week, and I saw a little bit of discussion about that online. That it, maybe I'm just grasping for straws, some kind of hope here in the lost colony of Southwest Alabama, but the fact that Governor Ivey did have her party, her pre-inauguration party, down at Gulf State Park. Now, you can argue that that's probably to bring attention to Gulf State Park, but maybe it just shows that she does know we're down here.
It does, and you know, the lieutenant governor had a big reception for lawmakers and others in Birmingham, so it, you know, and that was a real big hit. So it kind of shows that maybe some of these inaugural events are getting outside of Montgomery, and I think that's a great thing. I think it'd be a great idea for the next governor to involve the whole state, you know, have little events from north to south, east to west to, I don't know, allow the public and citizens to come and, you know, visit with them a little bit. You know, yesterday's event was terrific. It was, you know, a little cold, but it was a very good event if you just wanted to participate in history. But, you know, not everybody can make it up to Montgomery on a random Monday. So I think it'd be a great idea to get it outside of Montgomery to kind of tour the state a little bit, just to invite interest from, the public from kids, from school age kids, get them involved and engaged in what the state is all about.
Yeah, and I've said this in the past. This is one of these, I would say, nonpartisan things that I would like my children. I have never been to an inaugural parade in Alabama. I want to do that. I want to take my children, no matter who, well, maybe with the exception of Bentley, no matter who would be getting inaugurated because, yeah, it's part of the fabric of our state, and it's something good to see. You can just kind of check that box off. Hey, I've done that.
There were a lot of kids there, and there were clearly, where I was sitting, I could see probably three or four school groups that were being led by their teachers, and that was really good to see. You know, they get to participate in history, and I wish we could have more of that.
Let's talk about yesterday too, and we'll get into the the speech from Governor Ivey that I, in my opinion, listened to yesterday. One of her best, if not the best I've heard. But the other part of this is the former governor's there, right? This is something that is done. You welcome the dignities, the invitations out for former governors. But I can't help to think that the distraction of having Dr. Bentley there. I invite him and have him not show up. That would have been kind of my move.
Yeah, it was certainly the news of the day. News broke over the weekend that Bentley had accepted his invitation to come. Like it or not, it is newsworthy that Bentley, who left office in disgrace, was going to attend. So, but not only that, we learned that Don Siegelman was also attending.
Yeah, they were right.
He obviously has some trials and tribulations of his own. So, yeah, it was kind of a distraction.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I think we're having a little problem with the link right now. And I'll tell you what we'll do, because we'll probably have to reset that link. We'll run to the break here a little bit early, and then we'll come back more with Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. That's the website. Make sure when we come back, he'll tell you how you can get signed up to get that email in your inbox each morning with all the news out of Montgomery. And there'll be plenty more news out of Montgomery, as you just had the opening act yesterday with the inauguration, because, of course, what's coming? Oh, yeah, session coming, and they're already working on the politic in Montgomery. We'll talk about that more with Todd when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:16, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And if you want information about Governor Ivey, members of the legislature, upcoming session, you need to get that email in your inbox each morning. And Todd's made it so easy, I could even sign up. Months ago, I did it without any help, man. It was easy.
So easy a caveman can do
that's
it,
right.
Right?
Yeah, even I can do it. That's right. So tell folks what they need to do.
It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. And right there on the site, you can see the subscribe button. Just click subscribe. Enter your name and your email, and you're signed up. It's free, no cost at all. You'll get a daily email from me that runs down the top five news stories of the day, plus headlines from around the state and the nation, and front pages from all the state newspapers. It's a quick read if you want to catch up on what's going on in Alabama politics.
And seriously, I know this sounds cliched, but now more than ever, going into session, people need to keep up with what's going on in Montgomery for sure, because it's about to be full. It's already, I think, full speed in Montgomery, even though it's not officially session. I want to get into that in a second. I do want a couple questions coming in for you, Todd, on the text line. This one, talk about the federal delegation was there. I saw Congressman Bradley Byrne. No, Martha Roby was there. Were our senators there? Somebody asking, was Doug Jones there?
They weren't. Congressman Byrne was there, and Congressman Martha Roby was there too. They were the only ones. And it's not really their fault. In fact, I talked to Martha. She had to hop on a plane immediately after and fly to Washington because they had votes scheduled yesterday. This event, you know, the inauguration is usually held over Martin Luther King holiday, you know, the Monday after Martin Luther King Day. And so generally the delegation is free to attend. That wasn't the case this year. And I actually heard, you know, a couple of congressmen were a little disappointed that they decided to hold it earlier. So it's not really their fault. They had, you know, they had to be in D.C. I suppose that Martha and Bradley both had, you know, plans to go ahead and scoot up to D.C. via air. So they were the only two there. But it was good to see the federal delegation there. I wish more could have attended, but no, they were the only two.
You mentioned over the MLK holiday, which reminded me, in the speeches of Governor Ivey and Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth, making reference to the history of our state, and I know the governor specifically talking about Dr. King, and this kind of dichotomy, the history of the state, not ignoring the history of the state, but also looking to the future. I thought it was a great speech from the governor, and I appreciated kind of saying, hey, you know, we are aware of our history and the things we embrace about it, things we can do better, and we're moving forward. I thought it was a real aspirational even speech for a governor.
It was, and you're right about her referencing Martin Luther King. I mean, when you're standing there on the stage, you're looking right at Dexter King Memorial Baptist Church, you know, which is really where the civil rights movement started. And so it's kind of hard to ignore, and it's great that the Governor Ivey and Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth both laced that history throughout the speech. I was particularly impressed in how Ainsworth kind of handled it, because, you know, he talked about, you know, standing between these two pillars, the Capitol, you know, where the Civil War really began, and, you know, or at least politically, and then the Dexter King Church, where the Civil Rights Movement began. He talked about, you know, this is our history. We should embrace it. We should understand it and everything, but we should not be defined by it going forward. Let's be defined by a great education opportunities, you know. Let's be defined by a growing economy. Let's be defined by our great people now. I thought that was a tremendous message because, I mean, he's right. So often, you know, we are defined just nationally and throughout the world as, well, that's Alabama, you know, there's some trouble happened back in the day. It would be great to shake off that image and not ignore it, but shake it off to, you know, be known for better things and for more positive things.
All right, let's talk about some of the things the governor laid out yesterday, and none of these would be new to anybody that's read, you know, your work at aldailynews.com or listened to this show, but for the state at large, she kind of laid out the high points of what the governor is going to push for in the next 4 years. Education on there, but then got down in the nitty-gritty, like infrastructure, which of course means gas tax, right?
That's right. I mean, and it didn't take her long to get there to say, hey, you know, we've got a road and bridge problem, not just road and bridge, but port, airport, rail, things like that, that we really need to address. And she's going to be, I'm told that she is right now with her advisors and with some lawmakers. They're drafting up the basic points of legislation, what it could mean. So, yeah, I mean, she didn't shy away from it. She went right to infrastructure and said, look, we've got to do something. Let's all come together and find a way. You know, she did talk about some of the state's successes, particularly, you know, pre-K education, where we lead the nation as far as quality for our first-class pre-K program. But, you know, she didn't spend all the time bragging about good things. She talked about troublesome issues.
Right. That was the thing. I mean, she mentions infrastructure, which means gas tax. I'm saying, wow. And then she goes into the prison system. And it, for a inaugural speech, I said, good for Governor Ivey, because that's a kind of a speech where you might pass over some of those heavier lifts.
I agree. It wasn't all cheerleading. You know, it would have been easy for her to just, you know, talk about fun things, positive things, and kind of sugarcoat. She did not. And prisons is an interesting one. She said the line that Alabama needs to take care of Alabama problems. And what that was a hint to was, we don't want to see the federal government come in and take over the prison system, because that would trigger automatic tax increases. It would trigger prisoner releases. So that was a hint, you know, a wink and a nod at, look, we've got to fix this problem before it gets a lot worse and a lot more painful by the feds coming in. I thought that was an interesting choice of words, and I think most of the crowd probably got it.
Okay. With that being said, in our system, the legislature is stronger than the governor, the legislative branch a lot stronger than the executive. But the executive branch does have what the governor did yesterday, the bully pulpit, to kind of put people on notice. Not that they had never heard of it, but they kind of put on notice by the governor that I'm telling the people that this is a thing, they're going to be watching.
That's right. But, you know, interestingly, on the prison issue specifically, they're kind of passing the buck back and forth here. Yeah, the legislature funds prisons; it's a line item. But what they're talking about right now is doing some kind of executive contract to go out and build a bunch of new prisons, and that would not require the legislator's direct approval. Hmm. It would just require approving a contract. And so you see what I'm saying there? Like they're. You know, nobody really wants to grab the alligator by the tail. You know, maybe you can have this authority, maybe you can do this. So we'll see what actually happens. But the governor does have some authority in terms of if we're going to go out and build a bunch of new prisons, they can do that through a contract. Not the most transparent thing in the world, but probably the easiest way to go about it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like I said, what we need to do is when they push the lotto, it needs to be Alabama's prison lottery.
well, Sean, you know, we've been talking about that and kind of joking about that on your show for, I guess, a couple months now. I finally started to hear that from lawmakers recently about, hey, you know, if we really need money from a lottery, let's give it for prisons, let's give it for healthcare. And I don't know if they're joking or not, but they're kind of right.
Well, it's true. No, it would be a use if that's a place where we need money. It's just, you know, looking at this for decades, the idea of, it's funny how people are, it could be the same mechanism in a lottery, and it depends on what it's for, if people agree with it or not. It's not the lottery itself. If it's for the kids, then it's okay. If it's for building prisons, I'm probably not for that.
That's right. I did speak with Del Marsh, you know, President Pro Tem Del Marsh, about the lottery issue yesterday. He said, look, you know, you're going to see proposals, but it's not on anybody's agenda. It's not on the leadership or Governor Ivey's agenda to say, hey, we're going to do this year. He said there are a few lawmakers that are going to definitely propose a lottery, but he doesn't know what that might mean or what it might try to fund. So it's a sexy issue to talk about. It, you know, it generates a lot of debate, but nobody has it on their list of priorities for the state. Not at least not the legislative leadership or Governor Ivey.
How much stuff is you've got such experience in this? How much is done? You know, you had the parties the night before Sunday night, had parties last night in Montgomery. I know there's meetings going on. Session doesn't start till March, but how much sausage making is going on right now in Montgomery?
I think a great deal, actually, especially with the budgets. You know, the budget crunchers in Montgomery are at work right now coming up with all the numbers that the legislature is going to use to craft legislation. So that, you know, they'll get those proposals probably within a couple of weeks as far as where we are on the budgets. Those hearings will begin in February. So, look, yeah, the session doesn't start until March, but they're already, you know, talking and arranging and getting their ducks in a row. But I'll say this, on the main issues, everybody has been in agreement on the problems, on what the problems are. And that's a good start. It's good that they're going ahead and talking about these things, because the biggest mistake that either the governor or the legislative leadership could make is dropping a bill without allowing their other lawmakers to read it, especially these new guys. The last thing you want to do is surprise somebody with, hey, we're coming with this gas tax and I didn't even talk to you about it. They need to be talking. They need to be gauging interest, gauging support for this and that, because the best way to kill a bill is to come out of nowhere and surprise somebody. You know, that that would not be a good idea. So, yeah, there's plenty of sausage making, as you said, going on right now in Montgomery.
All right. I want to talk about, we'll call them the Camden Trio or the Camden Trifecta yesterday, but I might end up at a place different than you think when I mean the Governor Ivey, former Attorney General, former Senator Jeff Sessions, who you said in your notes steals the show yesterday. I thought it was good to see him there. But also there behind the governor, you saw one-time congressman and Joe Bonner, who is now going to become the new chief of staff for Governor
That's
Ivey.
Right.
So another Camden, so three Camden folks there. But the biggest story right now for me, just in the short term, is Joe Bonner in and Steve Pelham out.
That's right. And, you know, that has been speculated for, man, months. In fact, I was kind of hearing rumors last night at one of the galas. And, you know, I kept trying to get confirmation and never could get it. Otherwise, I would have put it in the news this morning. So, yeah, Steve Pelham, he has been Governor Ivey's chief of staff going back to when she was lieutenant governor. He's been an advisor for her for years. He's going to be leaving. He's going to Auburn University to work in economic development there. That's his alma mater, and I think that deal's been in the work for a while. You know, he's done his stint in state and federal government, and so it's a pretty cool gig to get to go work at Auburn. And Joe Bonner, who everybody knows, has joined the administration about a month ago as a senior advisor. So this is a natural sort of ascension to chief of staff. Everybody I know is pretty excited about it in terms of, hey, yeah, you know, Steve did a great job, but you're not skipping a beat because you're getting Joe Bonner. And, you know, everybody, most people I know really like Joe Bonner, you know, whether it was as congressman or his work in Tuscaloosa for the University of Alabama. He's got a lot of great experience. He's been a chief of staff before. He knows how to manage a staff. So I think it's a great pickup for her team. And you're right. It's another Camden, you know, connection that it's these things know no ends.
It's a hotbed there. I don't know what it is. We'll have to figure out what's going on there in Wilcox County. But three of them represented. And we're going to talk about this more going forward. I know there's going to be a lot between now and the actual start of session. And remind folks, once again, they want to read up on what's going on in Washington and in Montgomery. What's the website and how do they sign up for the newsletter?
That's right. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Right on the front page, you can see the button subscribe. Just click it, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on my list. I send out an email every morning, and that's where you can get an easy, quick rundown of what's going on in Montgomery, across the state, and in Washington, D.C.
As always, man, I appreciate it. We'll check back soon.
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Todd Stacey checking in. Coming right back. Grab some calls here after the news. Phone number 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1235, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. So, yeah, there. Well, the new news items coming off of yesterday's inaugural event in Montgomery. Steve Pelham out. Steve Pelham, architect, let's say, of the 2 years of Ivy's finishing out of the Bentley term. He's on the way out and in, a familiar name to so many of us here in South Alabama. Been on this show many times in the past. Former Congressman Joe Bonner, named as the new chief of staff for Governor Kay Ivey. That announcement was made this morning, and he will be moving in. I actually looking at, I think they're even changing. I saw that they're changing the email thing when you go to the governor's site. It's already been changed. And like Todd said, Ivy's office said Pelham will be the university's vice president at Auburn University for economic development and chief of staff to Auburn University President Steve Leith. So Bonner, of course, who served 10 years in Congress, represented AL1. He joined, it was like a month or something ago, he joined the Ivy crew. I remember that, got the emails, had to change the email address for Joe Bonner, and now chief of staff. So it should be interesting. Hopefully we will get Joe Bonner on the show soon to talk more about this new position and get some insight into what the next 4 years of the Ivy administration is going to look like. Also, you heard that update there from Bill Riles. USA has now named the campus stadium on campus stadium. Here, we'll get more from Katarina Lukatich from News 5.
Pressing here at South, where you can see construction continues on a new on-campus stadium. Today, school officials announced Hancock-Whitney Stadium will soon be home to the Jags football program.
The amount that it's accomplished in such a short period of time is worthwhile of our investment and our partnership, and we're excited to have our name atop the stadium.
The school has not said how much the bank contributed, but Hancock-Whitney now has the naming rights to the stadium for 10 years.
It's a partnership that is revenue sharing through financial services, where it's variable over time. Right now, we're not really declaring the amount.
The school has secured bonds to pay for the $75 million stadium that they will have to pay back over time using funds from the athletic department as well as public and private funding. The school's online Get On Campus initiative has raised nearly $3 million to date. School officials say they're still on track for opening the stadium for the 2020 football season.
You need a home base. You need a place to call your own, and this will give us a place to call our own. And then the traditions, all those things will start growing from there.
Hancock-Whitney also announced a $25,000 donation to the athletics department. At South, Katarina Lukatich, WKRG News 5.
All right, so there you go. So it's official. I think it's interesting, those that said, hey, this stadium, and I think there are a lot of people, no matter what side you were on, whether the city or county would give some money for the stadium program, I think most people thought the stadium's going to be built with or without the city. Even those that were pro the city giving money to the program were pointing out that they thought it would be done too, but they thought it would be a better deal for the city of Mobile to get money back for LAD and other things. But 2020, by the way, you see that? 2020. If I'm... Dalton, you can check the calendar here. I have the... Y'all have put up the brand new Manatee calendar here in the studio, and it tells me it's January of 2019. So I don't know if that means football season 2020, it's going to be completed. Will the Jags be playing in a year from whatever the Jags' first game is, probably what the last weekend in August, first weekend in September, whenever that is. It won't be this year, but will the season of 2020, football season 2020, the Jags be playing on campus in the soon-to-be-built Hancock-Whitney Stadium? So I think that's interesting. So that's moved along as well. I'd love to hear from you on that at 343-0106, 343-0106. All right, and then I was going to get into the, just a second here, we could talk about several of these subjects, but I do want to get into the hamburger, the fast food question. I mean, really? Really? You know, I hate to play this back-and-forth game because I think it's a waste of time, but I will in this case. We'll get in the gutter here on this one. So the full story is the Clemson Tigers, who somehow got lucky and beat the Alabama Crimson Tide. I'm joking. They beat up on my Tide. There was nothing but a beat down there. Wish I could tell you it was some kind of nuance of the refs or something like that, but it wasn't. As an alum and a fan, we got beat. Okay, so congratulations to Clemson. Clemson Tigers at the White House last night celebrate the national championship win. And because the government shut down, no one was there to prepare a meal. Okay, so there's the shutdown angle to the story. Day 25 of the partial government shutdown. President Trump said initially he thought he could have First Lady make some salads, but didn't think the Clemson Tigers wanted that, and he probably didn't either, so he ordered a smorgasbord of fast food. Here's the president commenting on this. This is where we are in the news cycle. This is probably the most played clip of the president in the last 12 hours.
I don't know if the weather changes things, but the Clemson championship team, the national championship team, will be coming tonight. It'll be exciting. Very great team, an unbelievable team. They'll be coming tonight. And I think we're going to serve McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King's with some pizza. I really mean it. It'll be interesting. And I would think that's their favorite food. So we'll see what happens. But they're coming tonight, the national champions, subject to the weather.
Okay, so their favorite food. If you're looking, here's the thing. Who knows what each individual player of the Clemson Tigers has as a favorite food? But in general, if you're going to have a food party, right, with kids, with young people, it's usually like a pizza party, right, or hamburgers, right, because everybody likes that. Now, would it have been something different if it had been the staff would have been there cooking? Probably, but the idea that they are panning, just for a second here, I mean, if you're the Uber Trump hater out there, you hate everything about Trump, is this fair? it's fair that from the late night shows to social media that they're panning the president for having the fast food smorgasbord there at the... I think it's ridiculous. And this idea that... And then there's stories going, you know, Trump eats more fast food than whom? That he's eating burgers and fries and all that. Like I said at the beginning of the hour, we land this plane. Do we need to go back in the time machine here to Bill Clinton? Bill Clinton and the McDonald's, right? Bill Clinton would... he would be jogging around. Remember when he jogged to the McDonald's? I love that. That's something I'd pull off. Say, I want to eat this thing, but I feel guilty about it, so I'm going to jog there and jog back. Or, let's even go more recent here. People were saying, I saw somebody posting up something like, Barack Obama ate healthy food. He only went to McDonald's every once in a while. He was at Five Guys, which is a great burger, but he was at Five Guys Burger all the time. It was like it was a whole shtick that he was at Five Guys. So, come on. This is where we are. This is why you could oppose, if you're somebody who opposes Trump on policy ideas, you can call in, we can debate those policy ideas, that's great. If it's that I'm going to gang up and say, well, he's the fast food president. There's a whole bunch of those. There's a whole bunch of those. Both parties. That's just being normal. You didn't know what to serve them. You got a bunch of young people coming over. Get a little bit of everything that's hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas, anything like that, and then there's somebody will like something. It's like I don't get how this dominated the discussion over on Twitter. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. Grab some text here at 343-0106, 343-0106. You can also hit us up on the phone line. What else could the stadium have been named? I don't know. Imagine if somebody would have put up more money than Hancock Whitney, they would have got the naming rights. I don't know. I don't think there's anything. I think it's probably to the highest bidder, wouldn't you? I mean, that's how you name stadiums. Is how you name bowl games. Whoever pays the most money. I have like no issue with that. I don't know if that. How much they're not, you know, somebody said, well, how much is it? Well, I don't know. They just said they're not disclosing the amount. I'm sure at some point down the road, they'll come up with that amount. But, oh, thank you, David said, this is called a bit controversy. That's beautiful. Randall suggesting he can't wait to buy a Trump burger from a fast food place. It's not even the cheering it on. It's just the non-story here. This is the non-story. Out of all the things, this is like you're focusing on the non-story. You could still say, hey, you got an issue with this or that or the other, but why you would... This is where we've come. This is what we're focused on, the controversy. Thanks for that, David. I appreciate it. All right. Also coming up next hour, speaking of controversies, maybe this would be the big one. Brendan Kirby joins us, and I'm going to read to you what he sent me a note here, okay? So I'm going to read it verbatim from a text he sent me, because he's going to land this plane. He's going to give you the rest of the story coming up at 1 o'clock. So make sure, even if you're heading into work or whatever, you can stream us at fmtalk1065.com, or you can go to the TuneIn radio app, which is, by the way, if you haven't downloaded that, it lets you listen to us wherever you have your smartphone, have a signal. It's called TuneIn radio, and it's free. And it works great. You just download the app and then hit local radio and hit FM Talk 106.5 and you'll be able to hear us there. But he sent me a text, and so you'll want to listen at one. He said, the cost of the shutdown, so the partial government shutdown, day 25 now, the cost of the shutdown soon will exceed the cost of Trump's wall appropriation request. Let's sink in for a second. Now, he's, you know, Brendan's good. He stays with the numbers. He stays down the data mine, right? That's where he stays, does his work down there. He has dug up the numbers and says, we'll get him to defend this statement, but the cost of the shutdown soon will exceed the cost of President Trump's wall appropriation request. How about that? I mean, that's... And at that point, then... If the money is appropriated for the wall, then you will be in the red for 5 point or 10 point whatever, $2.6 billion. This is what Brendan's got. The cost of the shutdown, you want to spread the story around, the cost of the shutdown will soon exceed the cost of the wall appropriation request. All right, grab some calls, and then Brendan joins us right after 1 o'clock. Phone number 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1250 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Tuesday. Grab some calls and text, and yeah, we'll have Brendan Kirby joining us here in just about 15 minutes. The cost to the nation, cost to the economy of the shutdown soon to exceed the 5.2-ish billion dollar request from President Trump for the wall. All right, first to Theodore, and we'll check in with Thomas. Hey, man.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Thank you for having me on. I thought your take on Kay Ivey was spot on, very provocative, very informing. I'm really optimistic about her term in Mobile.
Me too.
I think she's going to get thing, and we're not going to have a lot of fooling around.
Let's shenanigans.
Put it that way.
Shenanigans.
Monkey business. Monkey
right.
business is much better.
There you
I
go.
Like monkey business.
Okay.
And your dad does too, I think.
Yep.
But, you know, first of all, the GAO came out 2 weeks ago, and I mentioned this to a number of people. This shutdown is costing us $1 billion a week. Now, I don't know what kind of numbers Kirby's got, but they're probably right on, more accurate than mine, of course. But, and you know, there's some people during the shutdown, the private contractors, like we have them for the county to do the paving, because the county doesn't even have any machines to do paving. It's all contracted out. And all those people that work for the federal government, they will never recoup the money. They don't get paid because nothing got done. And so there's tens of thousands of those kind of people. And there's speech, one last thing. Ivy's speech yesterday, you know, you can't have a speech in the South without mentioning the Civil War.
I would disagree that some will do it in a way of trying to not say this is what happened. I think she was completely open with engaged and saying, here's what happened here, but here's where we're going. I thought it was really good of Governor Ivy.
I thought it was very good the way she worded it, too. I'm just saying, and the next time, I think we should spice up the Civil War and mention some of the battles. You know, like Petersburg and Shiloh and Ticonderoga, Bull Run. You know, we can spice it up a little bit.
Keep it all in the Eastern Theater. I hear you. Thomas, I appreciate the story, recount there. Let's go to Toby in Fairhope next. Hey, Toby.
Hey, how are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for calling in.
Absolutely. I've got a question on how this calculation works and how the accounting works on the shutdown costing the taxpayers. It seems like any day we could close the federal government, we ought to be saving money as taxpayers.
Like normal people like me would think that's true, but I'm sure Brendan's going to lay out the reasons it ends up. Reading through it is cost to the economy. And then, of course, we have to, when it's over, traditionally we pay back everybody's money that they weren't paid, you know, during the shutdown.
Well, the vast majority of those folks are actually going to get paid. They just have to wait for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right. So I think he takes that into the calculation that, hey, we're going to, I mean, all that money's going to be paid back, plus here are the losses, you know, to the economy and other areas of government that aren't getting this revenue or that revenue in, and by the end of it, another week or so, it equals $5 billion something.
Well, I say we just shut it down for the rest of the year and see if we don't end up in the black.
just see it like, we're closed, be back next year sign?
Yep.
We'll see
how accurate their accounting is.
Well, and we'll, hey, listen, I'll throw that question out for Brendan when he gets on with us, because he's done the digging on the numbers, and I'll get him to let us know.
That sounds good. I'll be listening.
Thanks, Toby. I appreciate it, man. Let's see. The online opinion poll question. Reminder here, even though we're really kind of a week late on this, because we've had this up for a while, but it continues to be valid. You know, well, sometimes online opinion poll questions will have up for a day, half a day. This one continues to be valid. When do you think the government shutdown will end? Even though we started last week, we'll keep it this way. Within a week, 0% said within a week. By the end of this month, end of January, 49% of respondents say that. 36% of y'all say between 1 to 3 months. 9% say 3 to 6 months. 2% say will not reopen by the end of 2019. And 4% of y'all say the government will never reopen. If you have not voted yet, we'd love to hear from you. Front page of FMTalk1065.com. It's the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Let us know what you think when you vote online. Right-hand column there. I saw this in New Mexico. It's coming out here. Because I guess flu is big time in New Mexico right now. So I think it's Alabama, except for Mobile County, is having a pretty hard time with the flu as well. But a story from U.S. News. I guess they're not U.S. News and World Report. Start talking about the flu and I start coughing. It says, bless you, but keep your hands to yourself. That's the message some Catholic parishioners are getting from officials hoping to curb the spread of the flu. In New Mexico, the Archdiocese of Santa Fe said yesterday, parishioners should limit touching during Mass, including by not holding hands during prayer and simply nodding during the sign of peace instead of shaking hands or hugging. Now, this would... I know it's the right thing, and looking a row back and looking a row, you know, looking usually the people on the same row with you are your family, right? When you're at Mass, but if you look up front, you know, you're shaking hands and greeting people. Now I'm just going to say from now, like this weekend, I'll just say, listen, it's the flu. I'd like to shake hands, but I can't. Peace be with you, but I'm not going to shake hands. That's what they're saying. The Archdiocese there say people do not have to, they can nod during the sign of peace, and not have to hold hands during prayer. That's why you're at least, you know, if you're 50% less likely to get the flu if you're on the end, right? You just hold your hand out. They said also only the consecrated bread will be administered during the sacrament of Holy Communion. They also encourage anyone who's experiencing symptoms such as sneezing or coughing to watch televised Sunday Mass from the comfort of their home. So you get to watch Mass for shut-ins. So there you go. The flu season is causing... at least one archdiocese. Oh, they said another one in Pennsylvania is going to do the same thing. So there you go. No word yet from our area if things are changed here because of the flu. They have any kind of different. But this was New Mexico and then also Pennsylvania on the list of places where it's okay not to touch people's hands during church. So, okay. Well, yeah, we can get to that. Okay, maybe I can get to that before... Okay, we'll try to get to this before we go to the news break, because we talked about the president and fast food. Y'all have seen this. It popped up a couple weeks ago, and I guess it continues to be the big story online, and maybe Dalton can give us some insight on this as well, about the McDonald's French fry box, the cardboard flap on top of the box. Now, this is one of these things, if this is true, I've been ignorant to it my whole life. I guess, well, a week and a half ago when I found out about it. You know how there's the large arch on the back, kind of like the headboard of the French fry box from McDonald's? They said the secret with that is it's supposed to be bent over. That cardboard flap is supposed to be bent over, and you're supposed to fold it back and put your ketchup there. You want to talk about how the French fry box with McDonald's, like not if you get the small and you get the baggie, but if you get the box, the top of it's like a headboard arch or whatever, where you're supposed to fold that back and put your ketchup there. So when I saw that, thought that was of interest. We'll get to that story, maybe get some insight from Dalton coming up next hour. All right, Brendan Kirby joins us in just a little bit, plus Ben Raines in the second half of next hour. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile.